to the training in economic discipleship based around 10 biblical principles of kingdom economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. In session
10, we will explore the theme of liberty, liberty from oppression, liberty from sin, liberty from our own sin, liberty from others' sin, liberty from exploitation, structural liberty, individual liberty. Throughout the scriptures, the great theme of liberty reverberates. It includes being set free from oppression, just as the Lord delivered Israel from the oppression of Egypt. It includes being set free from the sins of others committed against us. It includes being set free from our personal sins, just as Jesus delivered many, offering forgiveness of sins and asking, when challenged on it, if to heal a sick man was more difficult than to forgive sins. And for many, there is a freedom from oppression in terms of bondage to the demons and deliverance from demons. It also means being set free economically, and the whole theme of the Jubilee develops that theme, and set free from slavery. And so this encapsulates a massive amount of Christian life and experience. We're to not be bound, we're to be free. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. We can begin in the Exodus and the story of the people of Israel and their deliverance from oppression and bondage. On the one hand, this was directly the work of God. There was no revolution. There was no uprising. On the other hand, the people did organize in response to God's direct intervention. So we find a working within the structures, a respect for the structures, and yet an unrelenting part by the prophet Moses in speaking to Pharaoh and in delivering the Lord's judgment on the reign of Pharaoh. We find in it the freedom of the people. Much to learn from that story. And then we go to the Jubilee. And here we find in the Jubilee, every 50th year, a redistribution of wealth within Israel. So this is a national structural liberation from slavery. Slaves were to be set free. From economic bondage, those who had lost their houses and lands and sold them and become slaves or become poor were able to return to those lands, and there was an equalizing across Israel. The means of production, which in that case was the land, was redistributed. It was a time of equalization. So it's a year of liberty. And certainly wherever there is slavery in the world, this message is part of our proclamation. Freedom is inherent within the gospel message. And with the freedom, there is a celebration that comes. So you can't differentiate these two. And so the command is to go through the land and blow the trumpet that this is a year of Jubilee. It's a year of celebration. And so when Jesus comes, he comes celebrating. He comes declaring the liberty for his people. And the first church is a church in a time of celebration, gathering daily in the temple, gathering house to house, worshiping the Lord, thanking the Lord. Debts are cancelled and money is redistributed among the people. So the gospel and the discipleship that follows the gospel, it's a liberating gospel. Whenever people experience conversion and the Holy Spirit enters their lives, there's this great release of joy. And that immersion in the Holy Spirit, that baptism of the Spirit, can be uncontainable. Whenever Jesus heals or delivered, there's an unending joy. And this is also the not just the Pentecostal experience, this is the experience of the historic church, the bride of Christ, the more traditional church. I remember tracking down in New Zealand a rotund Anglican Franciscan friar. He was the epitome of what we would consider St. Francis, always joking, enjoying life in the midst of his chosen poverty. And this is the nature of those within even the historic orders. The Jewish calendar had three and then four holidays where people were to celebrate. These holidays in our modernist society get compressed, but we need to protect the celebration of life. And indeed, on Sunday morning, as churches across the nation celebrate, it's a beautiful process that keeps life within society. And when we look at these older traditional churches, I had a database of 1,200 churches in Auckland. And as I kept that database, I kept looking at the works that the churches were involved in to set people free from poverty. And I would sit there celebrating, worshiping the Lord for the beautiful bride of Christ. For every church was engaged in some way with the poor, with the migrant, with the refugee, with the outcasts, the prostitutes, with the alcoholics. And so freedom and liberty and celebration come together. Is this the same as liberation theology? No, it's different. It's quite different. But even liberation theology has roots in these passages. So it builds not just from Jesus, but also from Marxism. So when we walk alongside those who are trained in its thinking, we find ourselves aligned in many ways with their sense of walking with the poor, incarnating among the poor, solidarity with the poor, seeking justice through poor people's movements and through structural reform. But we also reject the bitterness and social analysis of the evil of Marxism. As Christians, we're to outdo such commitment. So our gospel's a celebrating gospel. It's also an ecological gospel. The Jubilee involves also the restoration of the land and a restructuring of the human-land relationship. We are to manage the land, not to abuse it. To manage, to steward is to care for, to protect the productivity of the land. So Jesus' aim is to bring all of creation out of bondage and to set it free. That's what it says in Romans 8:21. That the creation waits groaning for that liberty. And wherever we go, wherever the Jubilee is preached, so the land finds a restoration. Christians restore the land. They manage the land. But also Christians wait for that promised land and the promise of the Messiah to rule for 1,000 years, whatever that means, a long period of time. The 1,000 is symbolic, and to bring a right relationship to the land. And Christian evangelism in this next decade, to some extent, will be received, depending on how Christians are at the forefront of this ecological movement. In the reinstatement of the created order to God's original purposes. As creation groans, waiting for the message of God, the gospel, to penetrate to every nation, to every person. And so we find across the Sahara Desert, for example, wherever Christians go, they are reforesting the deserts. Wherever Christians go, they are digging wells in communities where the water is polluted. These are part of our ecological gospel. So life is a celebration. Life is an ecological restoration. We find with Jesus, he was always celebrating. He was always at parties. He was one who enjoyed life. He dined with the rich, and as he dined, he spoke of the kingdom. So we are to celebrate as we go. Our task is to bring the joy of Christ into situations of darkness, the hope of Christ into situations of despair. Now we find in the Jubilee also this theme of rest. And as we go on into the Pauline epistles, or particularly the epistle to the Hebrews, and we're not quite sure if Paul was the author, but it reinterprets the principle of rest dramatically. Paul in Romans speaks of some of us holding one day sacred, while others in their newfound freedom hold all days as being holy. In Hebrews 4, verses 1 to 11, it speaks of entering our spiritual rest, no longer striving to earn salvation or acceptance, but enjoying the free grace of salvation freely bestowed. So it's an extension of the theme of rest in the Jubilee into an eternal Jubilee where we're continually at rest. And these themes open the door for a Christian interpretations, various interpretations. The normative view is to keep Sunday as a day of rest, a day of revival through worship, which is spiritual rest, through recreation, which is physical rest, through restoration, which is emotional rest, and to keep a national enforcement of this day as beneficial for all, whether for believers or not. Now let me turn to the more macro issues of liberty and economics, and to examine the liberty and within it the limitations to governments to prevent them from bringing about oppression. For there are limits to the ruling of humanity over other humans. They come from even Genesis chapter 1, where the basic relationship of humans to humans is that of a relationship of equality. In the very question, am I my brother's keeper, is a sense of us being brothers and sisters. Because we're born in his image, and each person has an immortal soul and a conscience, we develop societies that care for one another and protect the image of God in each one, being accountable for all around. This is love. It goes back to our principle one of creating societies that are loving societies. And hence in the book of Samuel, and there is a dispute between the prophet Samuel and the people about importing a style of monarchy into what was then a relatively democratic system of judges and tribes, a theocracy. And we find the prophet speaking of the dangers of centralization of power around a monarchy, of the oppression by the monarch of the people, of the potential of a king to enslave the people, of increased taxation by such a king. And his sense was that God was not pleased to create a monarchy in Israel, but the people chose that monarchy, and within the span of three kingships, Saul, David, and Solomon, we find Solomon taxing the people, oppressing the people, centralizing power, building a great palace, laying the foundation for a great temple. And all of these things are acclaimed and wondered at. We also find him multiplying upon himself foreign wives and horses from Egypt. These are things that are strictly forbidden for a king back in Deuteronomy. And as a result, the Lord destroys that kingdom subsequent to Solomon's reign. And so today we find the centralization of power both in capitalism and in socialism. Increasing levels of taxation that fuel growth of governments who supply, they create money out of nowhere. And for most countries, taxation rate in the first world countries is 30, 40, 50%. These things require resistance by Christians, a discipleship that stands against these powers, as Jesus stood against the abusers of merchandise in the temple. Similarly, we find multinationals centralizing power globally. And the recent trade agreements that was sought with TPPA, Trans-Pacific Agreement, by 600 American corporations who sought to take control of national decision-making, not just economics, away from governments in courts outside of national courts. These are an essential violation of the principle of decentralization of government. And these require prophetic resistance and unmasking, a standing against these powers. This sinfulness requires regulation that limits the power of governments. Because governments magnify the individual sin into collective sin. And we know that governments will sin. And so Leviticus and Exodus, in various legal structures, we find they indicate processes for godly limitations, for punishment of crime, for feedback loops that limit governments' rapid responses to corruption. So wherever a government diffuses power, wherever the power is pushed back to the people, so that decisions are able to be made at local levels and multiple issues, nations remain healthy. New Zealand has remained relatively healthy because of the local governmental structure at city, at borough levels, at provincial levels, because of access, easy access for everybody to those in power. And we can look at this decentralization of power in terms of creation of grassroots organizations, in terms of civil society, nonprofit organizations. We can look at it in terms of decentralization of the spiritual life and the multiplying of congregations. We can look at it, the decentralizations in terms of economics, the creation of multiple small businesses and the networking of these as against the creation of monolithic multinationals.